Welcome to the Daily Objective, day 164 of the war in Israel. I'm joined by Mark Pellegrino. Hey, Mark, how's it going?
What's up, man?
So today we're talking about the the Nazi roots of Arab anti-Semitism. Now, that's maybe a little bit of a misleading title because the Arabs didn't really need the Nazis' help in hating the Jews. They were already there ideologically, but the Nazis had a bit of a more sophisticated approach to it. And there was a fantastic tweet on this topic, which is the basis of this show. It's, tweets by this guy have been the basis of at least one past show. It's Imtiaz Mahmoud. If you're not following him on X, you should. Mark, I'm gonna get to the beginning of it. I'm gonna read a little bit and then we can start discussing it. So it starts with, "It's been widely accepted that most Nazis who fled Germany after World War II fled to South America, mainly to Argentina and Paraguay, and even Venezuela. But what many don't realize, and it's a verifiable fact, is that many of the worst Nazis who were senior members of the SS and Eichmann henchmen fled to and lived in the Middle East, bringing the Nazi ideologies and their hatred of Jews to the region where they ingrained their hatred into local society. Alois Brunner is one such famous one. He fled to Damascus in Syria and became an advisor to the Assad regime." So, Alois Brunner is the first one we're gonna talk about. As was mentioned, he fled. He lived in Syria. He was basically. He lived there kind of as a hero. He was, you know, he got like a salary from the government, and he was, you know, lived a good life. And you know, Syria, we know where, you know, what how Jews and how Israel is considered in Syria. And basically, he was there to offer advice. Again, this person who was involved right before fleeing, involved in, you know, the Nazi war machine that killed 6 million Jews, and of course set the ideological, you know, foundations for you know, the public going along with that.
Yeah, not so surprising. I mean, I think even the more interesting character is the second one, who is mentioned, who immigrated to Egypt, converted to Islam, and then became a part of the Department of Education in Egypt. I think that's particularly interesting because Egypt is, of course, the source, the intellectual source, if you could call it intellectual, of the Muslim Brotherhood. And the Muslim Brotherhood is, of course, the spiritual source of Hamas. So it's like a very easily delineated line from fascism, Nazism, to the origins of Hamas ideology. If you want to follow Amin, that character who completely went native, but simply transposed his Nazi values over to the Arab culture.
Yeah, I agree with you. He's more interesting. I want to talk a little bit more about Brunner, and we can talk about the basically the star of this show afterwards. Brunner, you know, it's well known that Israel tried to get Nazi war criminals in different ways. So the most famous one was Eichmann, Brunner's direct boss, who was who went to live in Argentina, lived a decent life, and then was captured in what can only be viewed as a heroic operation, somehow brought back to Israel on a flight. I think it was a commercial flight, right? And stood trial and ended up being convicted and sentenced to death, the only execution in Israel's history. I believe that was condemned, by the way, the fact that Israel went, and that was condemned by the Security Council, that was condemned by the world. It's the Palestinians aren't the first people.
What could they possibly condemn? I mean, here we had this is the argument that we had just a few weeks ago with respect to the way Palestinian prisoners who were captured on October 7th are being treated. You and I both agree that they shouldn't be treated kindly. Their last moments on earth, and they should be their last moments on earth, should be relatively miserable. But the case that I made is that Israel stands for the mitigation of force, the subordination of force to reason. And what better case do you have for the subordination of force to reason than taking the architect of the final solution and putting him on trial? And you know, of course, the conclusion is foregone because he was clearly the evidence was just overwhelming that he was the architect of the final solution. But nonetheless, they didn't go there and just assassinate him because they would have gotten shit for that. They take him back for a trial. A trial where due process is allowed, where people can see the evidence for themselves and judge for themselves. And you don't get any more rational, any more liberal, if I could use that term, than that. And still Israel gets shit.
Yeah, a couple of points on that. First of all, I don't think it's the prisoners, the Palestinians who participated on October 7th and are held in Israeli prisons. I don't think it's their last moments on earth. Much more likely their last moments in prison because they will be released in some sort of deal. Israel doesn't execute Palestinian terrorists. Why? I have no idea. Michelle says in the chat, Exhibit B, saving Sinwar's life in prison. Yeah, the guy who masterminded October 7th was in Israel, was in prison. He has a terrorist machine behind him, so he was released and then did what he did on October 7th. So that's one
You
thing,
know,
but
Israel has to go its own way. I mean, if the world gives them shit for executing Eichmann for crying out loud, they have to start. They have to start. I think it sends a very clear signal to the fascist Arabs, the Islamo-fascists out there, that really nothing's going to happen to them, and they could possibly be released in a hostage prisoner exchange. So there's no fear in them to commit the crimes that they commit. I think a few public executions would change that.
yeah, and by the way, I think the criticism of Israel was, they took action on a sovereign nation's soil without their approval. But the thing is, you know what? You harbor Nazis, yeah, we will take action on your soil. That should be the policy. The right thing to do would have been for Argentina to extradite him, but that was not on the table. PC says in the chat, my mom attended Eichmann's trial holding photos of young cousins murdered in Auschwitz 19 years before. By the way, if you haven't seen any of the documentaries on the Eichmann trial, that is quite the story. By the way, I don't know where I stand on should they have executed him, in a Mossad operation or in. I get the point of saying, look, we unlike them, here's how we do it. But no, there
I mean,
is.
look, they would be right to do it that way as well. The trial is a formality because the evidence is so overwhelming. It's like the kid caught with his hand in the cookie jar. He's a criminal. He's on every document in town, signing off on the murder of Jews. So there's no question that he was a war criminal, a mass murdering war criminal. So the ex you know assassination is justified. Certainly going into a sovereign state and getting this guy because the sovereign state refuses to cooperate and they harbor a mass murdering, genocidal maniac, that's justified as well. People don't get that. And we as objectivists make this clear. We make very clear distinctions on what gives a right a state legitimacy and what doesn't. And that legitimacy travels all the way down the line to everything that they do. And tyrannical states aren't legitimate. You can't, and everything they do, therefore, that comes out of that tyranny and attempt to maintain that tyranny is illegitimate.
Yeah, justice in general, requires judgment, whether it's on the national level, on the personal level. You are not just to a murderer if you let him get away with it. You should be judged if that is your policy. But anyway, Eichmann's right-hand man, Brunner, was a bit wiser than him in where to flee to, because in Syria, Israel couldn't just show up and take the guy. So but he lost an eye in 1961 in a letter bomb He lost his fingers on his
Oh.
left hand in 1980 in another letter bomb.
Nice.
So he was Israel or whoever did that didn't manage to assassinate him, but they caused him, his life to be a little less comfortable. Of course, the Ba'ath Party, the ruling party in Syria, countered that by helping him and giving him the kind of support that the Palestinians now give with our tax money to anybody who does what Bruner did, which is try to murder as many Jews as possible.
Evil man. I mean, it's unspeak it's uns it's unspeakable what's happening today, because I don't know that there's ever been a more clearly defined good and evil in a conflict before, with the possible exception of the Nazis and the Japanese against the Allied powers. This is so utterly clear, and yet we have a couple of generations of young people who've been educated in neo-Marxist conflict narratives and anti-colonial indoctrination. And so now they're coming out on the side of the enemy, the obvious enemy. It just proves that Rand's concepts were right, that ideas rule the world.
Ideas and then those ideas have to be disseminated somehow, and the Nazi propaganda machine was it was a very strong propaganda machine. They put a lot of effort into it, and that goes into the next part of the tweet. So the tweet continues. Another I've mentioned before was Johannes von Leers, a close aide to Goebbels. That is the propaganda minister in Nazi Germany, who initially fled to Brazil before moving to Egypt. In Egypt, he changed his name to Omar Amin, converted to Islam, and became Minister of Education, where he created the curriculum for all schools, teaching kids about the evil Jews and Zionists, indoctrinating generations of hatred during the Sadat era. This guy, had a clear career, like somebody who was head of marketing at Pepsi one day and then head of marketing at Coca-Cola the next. This guy was head of explaining to people why the Jews should be exterminated in Germany, and then became that in Egypt. I mean, that's a pretty amazing amazing story, considering that, this is a country that has a border with Israel, and he was basically right there, continuing his work.
Yeah, and it can't be underestimated how insidious this guy's influence was, because, as I said earlier in the show, Egypt was the font of the Muslim Brotherhood, which was a fanatical attempt to assert Islamic dominance all over the world and caliphates all over the world. I forget who the actual founder of that organization was. He was some loony, wasn't he a loony physician? He was a doctor, but he was absolutely out of his mind. And that has morphed into Hamas, the statist, fascist, Islamicist movement that is now dominating the culture of Palestine. And don't, make no mistake, it's dominated the culture of Palestine. By every metric, the Palestinian people are completely enamored of this philosophy of Arab hegemony and the establishment of some Islamo-fascist state over the Jews, and the annihilation of the Jews. They said it explicitly. They said they're going to do it again, and there's no resistance movement. So, and every poll, by every poll and every man in the street interview, it suggests that the Palestinian people are wholly behind this insanity. So this is a war of cultures, man. This is a war between a medieval culture and a modern democratic state. And the two cannot coexist with each other. It's a lie to say that they can. The two-state solution is a lie. There's no possible way these two people, or any body of people who represents liberalism, can coexist with any body of people that represents medievalism and violence. There's just no way that they can coexist.
Thank you, Bonnie, for the super chat. PC, I'm going to read this just because I have a story to go along with this. He says, some myths claim Hitler escaped. I do not buy that. I think he died in the bunker. I remember just, it's got to be over 20 years ago, sitting in a pub in Israel, and somebody who had had maybe a few too many was telling me the story of how Hitler escaped, converted to Judaism, moved to Rishon LeZion, which is Israel's now fourth biggest city, I believe. Yeah. I'm not buying that, but it's always entertaining.
I could be wrong, but there was sort of some compelling evidence that he escaped via a submarine and made his way to Argentina. And there are some pictures that look interesting, let's just put it that way, of a man who appears to be like looking like Hitler in the 50s and 60s. And that he died more or less peacefully there. Did they save any of the remains from that bunker in Berlin? Can they be genetically tested? That would definitely put the nail in the coffin of any conspiracy theories, because that particular one that he makes it all the way to Argentina is it's a little compelling.
I don't
I
know.
don't know.
Nothing puts the nail in any coffin of any conspiracy theory. They never die. They know they change their form. And if you had compelling evidence, somebody will say the evidence was doctored. That's the point with conspiracy theories. You have questions about something, and you come up with the answers without any actual evidence. That's conspiracy theories are a sort of a faith-based approach to knowledge about what happens in the world. But
That's certainly true for many people, but I think there are some who can be convinced that the conspiracy is false if you show them the evidence. Like, I know some people who thought that the Bush administration brought down, in collusion, of course, with Israel, brought down the World Trade Center. But then there was an article in Popular Mechanics that disproved every single point the conspiracy theory was based on, and they ended up changing their minds. So it's possible to turn some around.
well, 9/11 conspiracy theories are still abound. Like, there's, so, but anyway.
I just saw one recently, actually, on Twitter. Somebody was trying to tell me that the Jews, the Mossad, were behind the attacks on the buildings. It was a demolition, which is logistically impossible. Just FYI, but you're right. They don't.
Daniel's joke is not going to be read on this show because I know the person who wrote that song wouldn't want it mentioned. But anyway, so another point here, Hamilton script mentions Mein Kampf is distributed by Al-Sharouk, a Ramallah-based book distributor to East Jerusalem and territories controlled by the Palestinian Authority, sixth on the Palestinian bestsellers list. Mein Kampf is super popular, and this reminds me of a point I made a few weeks ago when we talked about the election of George Galloway for Parliament in the UK. And there was a tweet by Nick Griffin, who used to be the head of the British National Party, a party that was for white people only until a court of law forced them to accept non-whites. And Nick Griffin was endorsing this, this. I think he now self-identifies as a Muslim, and. And I said at the time there is no disagreements that people will not overcome because of their common hatred of Jews. Anti-Semitism really unites such people, and we see this with this Nazi. Nazis said that the purity of the Aryan race is what they're fighting for. Egyptians are not pure Aryans, let's put it that way, but that doesn't matter. Because they hate Jews, they were open to hearing more about why they should hate the Jews, and anti-Semitism conquers all.
Yeah, indeed it does. We're living in absurd times, and I think every generation finds a reason to say that. But I'm hard pressed, being a bit of an amateur historian, to find times as stupid as these in America. Seeing the massive outburst of anti-Semitism in America when. And America was known and prided itself on not only being a safe haven for immigrants, but particularly Jews. So it's super disturbing to see this insanity now.
Thank you, Jonathan, for the super chat. Thank you, Daniel Krauss, the producer of the show, for the super chat. Daniel says BNP mentioned tip jar. I didn't know that was a thing. I thought there was only the Owen Jones tip jar. I think Owen Jones will continue to be mentioned more frequently unless the BNP does well in the polls. Maybe they can unite with the left and create the Kill All the Jews party. Cargo Crew says the Quran is considerably more anti-Semitic. By the way, I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, but it does have its fair share of reasons to hate the Jews. But it's not either or. You can if you really if you're a part of this this movement of wanting what the Nazis and what the majority of Arabs want, then you can have both the Quran and Mein Kampf. And by the way, I don't know how many of these people actually read, but they embrace the ideas because
Well,
that's how ideas work.
they have it in their bookshelves, so at their cocktail parties, they can show it off.
Well,
But
I'm talking about the Arab population in the Middle East by and large. I don't know if they have, they definitely don't have cocktail parties.
I know they don't drink, but maybe they do. Maybe they're that hypocritical.
Thank you, Catherine, also for the super chat. Should we read the? I think we had the kind of the main part of the tweet, but I think we should just so people know what the rest of the tweet is, and of course, follow Imtiaz Mahmoud on X. He has these great tweets from time to time, and some very good ones on other days. So it continues. In fact, thousands of Nazis relocated to the Middle East, mostly in Egypt, Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, and even the British Mandate of Palestine, where they worked with the local Arabs to kill the Jews in the region. Many Nazis were advisors to the Arab countries who waged war against fledgling Israel in 1948. So when you hear Israelis calling Hamas and other terrorists in the region Nazis, it's because they actually are. The Nazis who fled to the Middle East were welcomed as the Arabs had already established strong relations during the Hitler regime, and they shared the common goal of exterminating all the Jews. One last interesting little tidbit. Dozens of senior Nazis who fled Germany had their names changed by various governments sympathetic to them and ended up joining a new organization shortly after the war. That organization was the United Nations. Interesting how things begin to fall into place when you actually understand and research history. Mark, thoughts on the rest of the
I
tweet?
mean, yeah, no wonder the United Nations is so corrupt. Yeah, as he says, it all comes together. Once you start to see that there was a group of people that now dominate these institutions, especially one like the UN, charged with highlighting and or attempting to put down anti-democratic sentiment anywhere or violence in the world, and you see them disproportionately pointing out Israel's sins, quote unquote, or manufacturing them out of whole cloth, and writing resolution after resolution after resolution condemning Israel, while the murderers on the Human Rights Council get away with everything. You have to know that something really awful is afoot. And well, it makes sense. Well, they changed their names, they infiltrated these organizations, and they more or less solidified an ideological foundation for these institutions. It makes sense. That's why they're so anti-Semitic.
Yeah, generally the I think the when the world is talking about World War II, talking about the Nazis, condemning what happened, I don't think it comes from a full understanding of what happened, of what happened, of how philosophy shaped it. We mentioned The Ominous Parallels by Leonard Peikoff. I used to have a copy here just to hold it up. Might be somewhere behind me, but anyway, you should read that book. That book explained the philosophical foundations that led to Nazi Germany and how similar ideas are alive and well in the United States. And this is when in the decade or so when the book before the book was published, which was 1982. And I think today we are seeing Leonard Peikoff's prediction come true, because as we've said on the show, we are living very much in 1930s Germany. And yeah, and we and you know, we're living in 1930s Germany, but the problem is there is no United States or Great Britain to counter that, like Nazi Germany had. You know, we're looking at the Arab world as allies, as you know, people who want peace, but Israel has settlements and on occupation and whatever other stuff they say about Israel. So yeah, we live in scary times, and I think learning history is an important part of preventing what I think is very much coming from coming. And yeah, we hopefully we're doing our bit here on the channel, but it, you know, it's a very long journey, Mark.
I feel like the objectivists are like Cassandra. Wasn't Cassandra that person in early Greek history who was a prophetess whose prophecies always came true, but she was cursed because nobody believed her. And here we have objectivists from the source of objectivism, Rand, who wrote this unintentionally prophetic novel. It's prophetic only because she understands human psychology. She understands the ends of consistent practices of ideas, and so she sees where the practices of altruism and in particular in Atlas Shrugged, where, when we no longer respect reason, where will that end? She sees where that ends, and she wrote that in the 50s, and it all of it is coming true today. And so it's no surprise that her intellectual heir would understand the destination of ideologies today, and how we seem to be pitching and yawing towards a fascist state as well, and for a kind of respect for fascism again. So listen to the objectivist man, because they're 25 years, 30 years, 40, 50 years ahead of the times. Whatever.
Yeah, and you know, there are two objectivists on this show. There are going to be three on the next one. By the way, Mark, you were unable to join our episode of the reality show that's coming up, where we will continue our discussion of the debate on Lex Fridman. But where can people find more from you and hear more from you?
Yeah, look, go on Mark R. Pellegrino at Twitter. Make sure it's the check mark guy, because there are imitators out there that try to fool you. Don't let them fool you. You can look at my reality checks. Those are pinned to my profile page on Twitter, and I'm also on Patreon. Check that out. I'm starting to do a little piece on the intersection of philosophy and psychology for those of us who need that stuff. I certainly do. Anyway, so that's where I think you can find me.
Well, I'm at Razi Ginsburg on X, and you can also find me if you speak Hebrew. Also, if you don't speak Hebrew, but you want to understand this, in my podcast with my friend Naftali, which is every Monday and Friday, in the Hebrew language. There will be a link in the description and in the chat. So, and you can find me on the reality show in about a minute. Thanks, Mark. Thanks, everybody, for watching. We'll see you on
Thanks,
the
man.
reality.
Thank you, man.